This is a podcast of Costing the Earth from the BBC. For full terms and conditions, please go to the website at bbc.co.uk. Now, here is Costing the Earth with me, Tom Heap.
I think we have something in the order of 2 billion tonnes of material that's sitting in landfills.
Rubbish! We throw away so much into landfill sites.
There's about 24, 25 million tonnes of domestic waste that's still going to landfill, and there's probably an equivalent from industry.
And now it seems we want to dig it up again.
There are more than 16 million tonnes of waste stored here. Trash. And we believe this is a very important resource for materials and energy. We want to give back those resources to the society.
In this week's Costing the Earth, we'll be performing an autopsy on landfill, delving into the guts of a dump to the parts most environment programmes never reach, to reveal an extraordinary truth. We're about to start mining it to make more stuff from it. Our refuse odyssey begins just across the channel. I'm in the Flemish half of Belgium, quite close to the Dutch border, at what is the birthplace of a revolutionary idea in what we should do with our waste. I'm overlooking a landfill site, and in many ways it looks fairly normal. I can see trucks delivering more waste from our businesses, and I can see a digger covering some of it with sand. But here they're planning something which could change the whole way we look at these places. And I'm with Yves Tieleman, who's the project manager here. Yves, what are you planning here?
Well, soon we'll be starting here the mining of a landfill and recuperating materials and energy out of this.
So instead of throwing things into the hole in the ground, you'll be getting things out of it.
Absolutely, because we believe that it contains materials and energy that we can give back to society. We're no longer landfilling incoming waste streams just to put a cover on top of it and never look at it again. No, we want to mine it again.
Well, as we've been talking, we've just walked over a rise here, and I can see now down into what looks like a landfill site. I can see trucks moving in, big bags coming off the back, what looks like rubble and timber over there. Talk me through what I'm looking at here.
On the left-hand side, you see indeed the landfill that we are operating today. And then a bit further, when a particular cell of the landfill is full, let's say, we cover it as a traditional landfill, meaning that we apply a foil 2.5 meters thick and then a 2 meter sand layer, a top cover layer, in order the waste to be properly stored. And then we implement the vegetation in order to make it temporary nature.
So you've got a timeline here of what traditionally happens to our waste. You sort it and you bury it underground, you cover it in plastic and then sand, and then you vegetate it. But what you're about to do is turn back time. You're going to start with the vegetation and go back and uncover something like this landfill and dig the useful stuff out.
It's indeed quite revolutionary because we'll be doing the same thing but reverse. We'll be first removing the vegetation, then taking away the top cover layers, and then mining the waste which has been stored here for decades. And afterwards, we'll be restoring the entire area as sustainable nature. So everything will look back again as it is now there today.
It's quite extraordinary, through the looking glass kind of stuff. But you actually think there's valuable material to be got out rather than stuff we don't want to be thrown away.
That's right. There are a lot of materials which can, in the first phase, be recuperated.
It truly is radical.
Absolutely. When we started talking with the local governments and also the Flemish governments 5 years ago, and we were telling them, okay, we have ideas to open up the landfill again and mine it. Yeah, they were thinking we were going crazy, of course. But in the meantime, we've done a lot of research. We did a characterization study to know exactly which materials and energies are stored here, how to properly mine the landfill, recuperate as much as materials as possible, and reclaiming them and giving them back to society as materials and energy.
We'll be returning to Yves Tieleman to find out exactly what he's hoping to pull out of the ground in Belgium later in the programme. Landfill mining sounds like a radical proposal, but the idea that underpins it, giving new life to stuff we throw away, has a long history. Some form of waste has been around as long pretty much as mankind has been using things. But the amount of that waste and the proportion we actually fling and forget as opposed to find another use for
has changed a lot. I'm here at a site in North Warwickshire around Packington and Coleshill where we can chart at least some of that history. Not going many centuries back, but at least down to the Victorian times. And I'm here with Stuart Hayward Higham on a slope of an old Victorian dump. Stuart is a technical director for the waste company CETA, and you've already been doing a little digging around here.
Yeah, I've put my way through the nettles, and we've got down here little bits of porcelain and glass and old bits of ash, which is about all that we were throwing away in those days. Everything was being reused. We covered very much end of life stuff in the site.
Those three things, glass, porcelain, ash, was pretty much the sum total of what the Victorians couldn't find a use for?
Yeah, we were very good at using everything that we could find a use for. Old food went to pigs, and to the compost heap. Metals went back to recovery, textiles did. So really it was broken pottery, broken glass that really had no other use, couldn't return back for another bottle that went into these sites. Waste wasn't really on the agenda, and we made use of everything that was usable, and there were lots of people and small industries using that material.
I mentioned we're on an old Victorian dump or landfill site here, but we're surrounded by the site you now operate. Now, we're going to have a look at it, but just tell me how we can kind of plot time through your site here.
Okay, well this site obviously is working pre-First World War and through to the Second World War. The Packington landfill site started as a quarry, but started taking some quarry waste in the 50s, started taking what we would regard as waste in the 60s. And has taken waste since then from Birmingham and the West Midlands conurbation and locally from Warwickshire for, 60 plus years now.
Stuart's garbology lesson then took me deeper into the waste and trash of the past.
This is the start of the site. This is waste that we took in the 60s and 70s, starting to get a little bit more paper and cardboard at the time. Not so much food, so not so much gas. You can see the occasional gas extraction here, but there's not a lot of gas left in here now today because it's old and there wasn't a lot of potential. And then looking up the hill, looking up 80 metres odd, up there you're going through 80s, 90s, 2000s and waste place today from 2013.
Right, well give me a feeling, if I were to drill down into some of that 80s and 90s thing, what's characterising that rubbish?
All right, you'll see a lot more plastic waste. Plastic came through Bakelite in the 70s and into the more plastic things that we have today. So a lot more plastic. There wasn't a lot you could do with plastic. You couldn't really burn it in the home. 80s, we were very profligate as a society, so lots of cardboard and paper as a proportion, a lot more of that. A lot more food waste appearing. We started to get prepackaged meals and a more city-based life where you couldn't get rid of food in the garden or you didn't have a garden to get rid of it. And a lot of construction waste.
We've talked mainly about the ingredients and how those are changing over time, but what about the actual quantity over the decades that this place has been operating?
Well, I think on the site, this site reflects quite naturally what happened in the UK market completely. Small quantities initially, and then as we moved into the 80s, much, much bigger quantities. So here we were doing over 2 million tonnes a year. Nationally, we were doing hundreds of millions of tonnes, effectively going into landfill at the time. And now, as recycling and reuse has become more to the fore, the volumes have reduced. So here we're doing a lot less than we used to. And as a society, we've reduced 30, 40 million tonnes of municipal waste going to landfill over the last 10 or 15 years.
In the 80s and 90s, do you think our consumer lifestyle and the sheer sort of throughput of material had overtaken our ability or knowledge or preparedness to do anything with it?
I do think the bloom in volume and the change in focus from, I suppose, the austerity years in the 50s and 60s into the more consumer-based profile made waste less expensive. And that meant that we were able to live our lives and not worry about the value that we were throwing away.
And since then, as Stuart just said, what we're throwing into holes in the ground has decreased. Something that Peter Jones, former head of waste firm Biffer, now environmental consultant, a garbage guru if you like, has seen firsthand.
At its peak in the 1990s, there was as much as 90 million tonnes of, shall I say, carbon or organic-based material going to landfill. And in total, the tonnages, if you include construction and demolition wastes, were much, much higher than that. Today, we've seen a radical change from those levels. The government introduced a landfill tax in 1997, and by that time, the writing was on the wall, and certainly many companies were realising the need to begin the diversion away from landfill. Landfill tonnages went down by 2000 to about 60, 65 million tonnes. That's roughly a tonne for every man, woman and child in the country at that time. And now we're looking at tonnage inputs of the order of 20 to 24 million tonnes and continuing to fall. The basic reason for this reduction lies with the introduction of the landfill tax, which started at £1, but by next year or the year after will effectively mean £100 a tonne to dispose of waste into holes in the ground.
You're listening to Costing the Earth, and in this week's programme we're allowing rubbish to rise from its burial place and live amongst us once again. Landfill mining will give waste a second life. But in order to mine trash, we need to understand trash, and that's where Dr. Richard Bevan from the University of Southampton comes in. He showed me his compactor, a huge cylindrical vat that can recreate conditions inside a landfill site. In simple terms, it looks like a giant cider press and is the only one of its kind in the world.
There's a big plate at the top which is driven by hydraulic rams that comes down onto the waste and it actually compresses it. And we can mimic what's happening, say, 20 metres down in a landfill, 40 metres down, as much as 60 metres down.
Sure, it varies, but can you give me a picture of what it is like, say, 60 metres down in the landfill site? I mean, is it very warm?
Well, it's likely to be fairly warm because the degradation processes in landfills produce energy and heat. It's certainly going to be fairly compressed and compacted at that sort of depth. But in terms of what it actually looks, it probably depends very much to the extent to which degradation processes have gone on, the extent to which, for instance, the sort of the organic material in landfill, so your food waste that you've thrown away, also things like paper, to what extent that has actually degraded. But, you know, quite often when you dig up waste, you'll get a big pile of sort of black-looking material that, you know, at the surface you can't really tell what's there, but if you actually delve in, you get a big clod of what looks like black clay. You can start breaking up and you sometimes find undegraded paper there.
Really? Undegraded paper?
Yeah.
So something even you might be able to read the print?
Absolutely. I think Andrew here has got an example of, well, here he is. He's got this.
Yeah, Andrew, the beautiful assistant. He's just brought
what
newspaper.
Date is this, Andrew?
1960.
There you go. This was recovered from a landfill.
Yeah, this is the Sunday Express, London, April the 17th, 1960. So that's now 52 years ago. That point, is extraordinary.
Yeah, the point is that's been in the landfill for a long, long period of time and, you know, that has not fully degraded. The difficulty we've got with landfills is that while there are materials that aren't fully degraded or they're still going to degrade in the future, there is a requirement for the landfill operators to maintain aftercare and manage their site once they've been closed. And that's actually something that they're going to have to do for many decades, if not centuries. And one of the main things that we're researching at the University of Southampton is to look at methods whereby potentially that aftercare period could be shortened, and so processes that would accelerate these degradation and clean-up mechanisms.
Then it was time to get my hands dirty. So, in true Costing the Earth style, I got stuck in search of the good stuff.
I'm going to have a little rummage around here, and one thing that immediately dates it is there seems to be some cassette tape here. Don't get much of that dumped anymore.
This was some waste we excavated from a landfill site that we've been using for some of our long-term leaching tests. The waste is something like 12 years old.
This bottle is almost completely unchanged. The bottom's rotted, but the rest of the plastic,
possibly slightly more brittle than some of the plasticizers might have come out.
Teaspoon, can of Strongbow, and yep, a piece of Lego. The brilliant thing about Lego is it never does age or break down. That is equally true in a landfill site.
So nothing really to trouble eBay or the Antiques Roadshow. But Yves Tielemann in Belgium is far more optimistic. I asked him what they were hoping to mine.
We're thinking about recovering, first of all, metals, ferrous metals, non-ferrous metals, precious metals. But we also see plastic, wood. We think there's a lot of construction demolition waste that can be recuperated for also building purposes. We have a sandy fraction which we can recuperate, which we can purify and then also offer again to the construction industry.
You mentioned precious metals. Can you actually find, I don't know, gold or platinum or something down there?
Of
Or perhaps not that precious.
No, but we have, of course, traditional ferrous metals, but also aluminium, copper, zinc, those kind of metals, which are also precious, of course.
Yeah, and they have a huge value today, as we know. People go as far as stealing them, so you can go in and get them in good quantities, can you?
Absolutely, because this landfill started out in the mid-70s, and at that time there was nearly no recycling. So that part of the landfill extremely full of these metals and other resources, which of course have a high value nowadays.
And Yves is not just guessing what lies beneath. He took me to a part of the site where they've carried out preliminary attempts to mine the landfill.
I'm just picking across this area where they've already done some experimental mining, and it gives you an idea of the kind of raw materials they might be finding. There's some rubber here, a tyre, I can still see the word Pirelli, plastic bottle, there's a bit of rubber hosing there, metal lid, bit of wood. Just about all these things have either got a value in terms of being reused or in terms of being broken down and turned into a fuel. In small quantities like this, obviously, it's pretty worthless, but in the bigger quantities you find beneath here, it's got some real value.
That's right, both in the materials that can be recuperated as in the energy that can be made out of this waste.
So what's the technology going to be here when you actually start to mine? And is it going to be a bit like open cast mining? Going to be here with diggers and then sorters? Talk me through it.
We'll be, first of all, removing the vegetation, removing the top layers, the foil, etc. And then we'll be just with regular cranes and dumpers mining the waste, and we'll go into a material recuperation facility.
The sorting procedure is a little bit like you'd get in a recycling waste recovery plant at the moment, with some things that shake, some things that blow, some things that are magnetic, stuff like that?
It's quite similar, but there are a number of differences with fresh waste, let's say, as we call it. Here, the waste is sometimes quite wet because it's in there for years. It's sticky. It's very heterogeneous. So it's more difficult to separate it into a number of streams. So we need to get it pre-dried to the right moisture content, and we need to create a number of conditions, what we call conditioning, enable the waste to be prepared for an optimal recovery.
You're not just planning to recover materials, you're also planning to recover more energy. Explain how that's going to work.
We know that the waste being stored here, or at least a major part of it, also has a very high energetic potential, and we want to recuperate that in the best possible way, and also want to avoid creating any more residues which we need to landfill again. So we have researched which technology is the most suited one for our application, and there we have found gas plasma technology, plasma gasification technologies, to be the best suited technologies.
Gas plasma technology is new, smart stuff. Yves' company, Machiels, have set up a partnership with UK-based Advanced Plasma Power. They plan to make new energy from old landfill waste. Their CEO, Rolf Stein, took us on a tour of their pilot plant in Swindon.
We take refuse-derived fuel that's been prepared by others at this facility here. It comprises around 55-60% biomass in the form of paper, card, textiles, and still some food residues. And the rest is a sort of light fraction of plastic films and such like. So that is pretty much what you see in front of you here. Once it's prepared, it's fed into the gasifier column, the tool column you see on the left. That is basically the first stage of our process, where this solid material is turned into a crude synthesis gas, basically a gas that's still quite high in tars. And the inorganic components of this feedstock are basically left in the bed of the gasifier. Now, both the bed material and the gas are fed then into a secondary stage, which is our sort of proprietary innovation here, where we have used a plasma converter to do two things. One is to crack this tarry gas into its constituent molecules, essentially hydrogen and CO, and the other is to vitrify the organic fraction. There's a molten material which is continuously tapped off. That's then cast into this plasma rock, which has application as a building material, aggregate, for instance. And then the gas flows out of that pipe you see at the top. That then subject to a little further cleaning to remove acid constituents, because you can imagine waste has, for instance, from PVC, has elevated chlorine levels. Those are removed. The gas is cooled. and is then suitable to be used directly in power generation, so in gas engines or a gas turbine, in fuel cells, for instance, to even improve the efficiency further. On another project that we're currently working on with National Grid to produce bio-substitute natural gas, literally to replace natural gas with a waste-derived bio-natural gas for grid injection.
It sounds like a win-win. Less waste and more power. So who's paying for the landfill mining planned for Belgium? It could be an expensive operation.
Well, it's a relatively new project and idea. So in the beginning, we'll need some incentives of support from the government to make it viable. But as resources, materials and energy are getting scarcer and scarcer, and so expensive and more expensive, it will become a sustainable economical model very soon.
Just like we used to have mines across a lot of Europe, and there are now raw material mines in, I don't know, Australia or something, you know, we could be mining this landscape again in a big scale, you think?
In Europe alone, there are over 500,000 of landfill sites containing well over 5,000 million tons of waste. So they're basically one big storage facility containing materials and energy that we want to give back to society in order to reduce the pressure on fossil fuels, reduce the pressure on primary resources, because yeah, we only have one earth to spoil.
That is a vast European total of 5,000 million tonnes of waste. With that in mind, back in the UK, I rejoined Stuart Hayward-Higham from CETA. We climbed that 80-metre hill he talked of earlier in the programme. It's the highest point around,
and it's all composed of rubbish. And it's still going on over there. When you look at features like this, okay, you're doing your best to landscape it, and I'm sure it will look, you know, like a fairly natural hill in the future. But when you take things like this, do you think it's something rather horrific we've had to do to our countryside, or is that a bit of an overreaction?
I think on a society basis, looking at how much we've thrown away here, which is something like 23 million tonnes in this one site, yes, there's some good lessons to learn, and we won't be doing it again as a society. I think we've got the message, we are recycling, we are doing the right thing now. So our tonnage is here reducing, and that's that trend going forward.
We've seen elsewhere, in Belgium in particular, plans to mine landfill. Is that something that's crossed your desk, or does it seem mad?
Logically, within this site and sites like it, there are materials that have a value in today's society that didn't previously. Digging them up is logical. We mine other raw materials, so the logic is there. The process is quite technically difficult. You've got lots of material in here that you've got to deal with, and commercially there's four things you really need to get in place to make it happen.
Rattle them off for me.
Yeah, I certainly can do. Releasing land for development. It's recovering the commodities, the plastics and the metals. It's recovering the energy that's still embedded in the waste, and it's reducing our pension liability effectively for the site.
Right. So to meet all those things, do we have to be in an environment where raw materials are much more expensive, or someone's put a big incentive or subsidy in place for doing this? It seems still a little bit implausible. Have you actually looked at the feasibility of mining this site, for instance?
We did. We've looked at a number of sites, this one included. This one, the most difficult, because it's been operational so long, it's got such a different variety of waste. Probably doesn't get harder than here. So 2005, we did a study, we looked at the records, we went back, we talked to the staff, we looked at the old waste records from the 50s and 60s and 70s to understand what's gone in, to quantify that in terms of how much plastic, how much aggregate, how much food and other things. And then we looked at how to dig it up safely, how to recover the materials, and what the shape of the site would look like after that, and what we could get usefully out of it.
If I were to bore down into here, would it be a bit like sort of seams?
It would be seams, but chronological seams. This particular location we're on has about seven ages of waste in it. So at the bottom is 70s, and then you'll have every age after that coming up. So you would see a history of landfilling for this area for the last 50 years.
And are those ages characterised slightly by different types of waste? So if I wanted to get plastic out from my mining, I'd go to a certain depth, whereas if I wanted to get aluminium, I might have a richer seam somewhere else.
Yes, your rich seam for plastics is the 80s and 90s, and we'd be able to go down here and find that seam of material here and recover those materials. Metal is slightly longer over a longer period of time. Some of the electrical goods more recent in terms of that process.
I mean, you must have a good another 30 years of working life in front of you. Do you think you'll see landfill mining in that time?
Definitely. Yes, I think the conditions at some point will come right. Which sites and which areas is debatable. You'll have to pick your sites selectively, but yes, I think those conditions will exist at some point.
And Stuart may well be right, but what about the environmental worries of mining? Local communities might rather the stuff stayed underground rather than make a return journey through their local village. And pollution is the main worry for the Environment Agency. Dust, noise and groundwater contamination coming at the top of their list. But none of these objections seems to condemn our past rubbish to lay underground forever. Rolf Stein again from Advanced Plasma Power.
This is a known process to remove resource from the ground. It just so happens to be resource that we put there in the first place. And we know where it is. And largely, you know, we know what it is. They're not in all cases. You know, some landfill sites have been less well managed, and that certainly is a challenge. But, you know, many have a good inventory. And, you know, any project of this sort would require some very detailed site investigation, and that's been undertaken in Belgium already.
And on top of his massive man-made blister on the Warwickshire landscape, Stuart Hayward-Hyam thinks we might look back at our wasteful habits of the last 50 years as a big blip.
I think we'll look back, and as I think we do now, and wonder why we threw those materials away in the first place. And you see that if you talk to your grandparents, that they never threw anything away in their age. Everything had a reuse, textiles were redone, paper was used in the toilet. And I think we'll look back and say, well, where did we lose that process of valuing materials? I think definitely we'll look back and say a mistake from which we've learned.
That time is still a little way off. Back in Belgium, Yves Tieleman says that landfill mining will make up for the mistakes of history, not for the mistakes of the future. So before you say, oh, so it's okay to throw things away, then it's not.
It's using the historical potential which we all created. We transform this waste into materials and energy, why we believe that waste does not exist anymore. Mm. It's a temporary phase until we recover it for use in the society.
So in our general day-to-day use of materials, those three R's, as we call it, reduce, reuse, recycle, they still remain the key. And then for the past, it's also go in and mine it.
In Europe alone, there are over 500,000 landfill sites containing well over 5,000 million tons of waste. So they're basically one big storage facility containing materials and energy that we want to give back to society.
That was a podcast of Costing the Earth from the BBC.